Oh yeah, what condition my condition was in.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Now, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Well, North Bay Stock and Jacks, not somehow. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures down 54. Yeah, 54. Dow futures down 369. NASDAQ futures down 14. What is going on here, guys? This is 3 days in a row we've been doing this now. What is the deal? Tell me the deal. We were down.
It's setting up the right dip, Tom. That's all.
It's doing something. Yeah, And I did some good stuff yesterday, but first thing I want to hear from my brother is, what about the trade we didn't do? And so I can't wait till he shows up, type of thing, you know. we could have made a move. We did just the right move to be ready to go on the upside for it to bounce. It did, and once it bounced, we didn't. We rolled one of the positions up, and just bear with me for a second, Kevin. We do a program, this protected index program, and the whole idea of it was, when we designed it in 1997, was that you would buy long term puts against the position, because options only used to go out 9 months back when I started, and you really, because of the time decay on the puts, you really couldn't find a way to where you were insured all the time. It was just too expensive. Because 9 months wasn't far enough, because options decline not linearly. Like, if you get your auto insurance bill, it'll be, you know, 6 months will be $400 and a year will be $800 or $790 or something, a little bit of a discount. Options do not decay that way. It's not the same in terms of dollars per day. The further out you go, the less you pay in dollars per day, even though obviously you're paying more. After 1987, they had something, long-term options, they called them LEAPS, just because they didn't want to use the term options. And so they came out, and they were out 18 months, 2 years, maybe sometimes even more than that, depending on whatever cycle that stock was in. So it actually became, I want to say, almost, you know, you could do it. You could insure yourself in terms of dollars per day by buying this long-term put option, long-term insurance, and it wasn't so bad in terms of dollars per day. Okay, so we put together a program where we would insure the indexes that far out, and then we would sell nearer-term calls against them to pay for the put. So our goal was to give you the market return over time with having insurance like every day, so the most you could lose was, you know, 5%, 6%, whatever it was, and no matter, even if the place cratered, but over time that we would pay for the put insurance. Now, obviously, if things just ran up, you know, you weren't going to, you know, if a stock got taken over, you were going to lose that piece because we had covered calls sold against it. But for a decade, it did fine. And that's how we did it. I mean, it was pretty much idiot-proof. We had once in a while you get a big move and we'd roll the puts down. By and large, the market was not like this. And so now we're doing the same thing for people. But the program got torpedoed. Because when interest rates, and I'm over, Kevin, tell me if I'm way over what he said, when interest rates go down, it affects your option prices. Call prices go down and put prices go up. Reason for that is when you buy an option, I'm getting too deep here, If you buy an option on a stock or a piece of land or whatever, a call option, I have a right to buy your house, Kevin, for $400,000 for 3 years. Well, what's the single biggest piece of that option going out is that I don't have to buy your house and I don't have to pay mortgage insurance or whatever on it. So interest is a big component of the calls. And it works positively toward the call, but negatively toward the puts. And I won't go into how short stock interest and stuff works. Not today, anyway. So, anyway, for the next 5 or 6 or 10 years, we really didn't even do the program because all we did was creep up. The calls were cheap and the puts were expensive. And all of a sudden, like I said, 2.5 years ago, people call up and say, hey, my stuff's getting a little high. Do you guys still do your program? And I said, well, gee, I remember how to do it. We haven't done it in a while. All of a sudden, out of the blue, we get people calling wanting to do it. And then to the point where I have, you know, place other money managers now that want me to do it for them on a subcontract level in addition to my own people. Okay, well, that's fine. But now it's totally changed in terms of what you try and do with the associated risk. Now, I don't want to go out so far on the puts because the market's going up and down like almost every day to the point where you need to adjust those puts, because if you buy a stock at 100, you buy the 100 put and the stock runs to 90, well, you don't want the 90 put, or the 100 put, you want the 90 put. So you buy the 90, sell the 100. So you actually make money on your put. So if it runs back to 100, which it's sort of been doing, on one day it won't, obviously. If it runs back to 100, now you buy the 100s and you sell the 90s. So what you really just done is you probably made $4 on that spread and you're right back to where you were on the stock. So it actually, movement can help you, but it's not the way the system program's designed. But in order to be able to move those puts up and down, you need to be shorter term because those trade a lot more. Now, the flip side of that is, if ever you got a dead week, you're really going to suck on the premium that week. So yesterday, we have puts for today, and we race up yesterday, and I said, Dan, we better roll these puts up. And he goes, when do you want to roll them up? I said, well, forget it. Forget it's me saying this. Let's just roll them up tomorrow. And he goes, one day? And I go, well, yeah. I said, the things move 5 hours today. Let's just, tomorrow, every day now is like a week, Kevin. It's unbelievable. You know, we're talking about moves every day that used to take a week. So let's just roll it tomorrow. Tomorrow's going to be another day. And sure enough, here tomorrow is another day. And now we're at the 53 puts. The 57s down to the, 53 is up to the 57s. And now it's under 53. So we're going to make $3.50 on that spread. We paid like 60 cents for it. I mean, that's crazy.
So the end of the story then is you're buying drinks tonight.
This is all for my clients. This isn't for me. So I assume,
you're still buying drinks.
Well, true. But I assume my clients, you know, at least know they're going to see more trading than probably they should see. But literally every day we've had 2% moves now 3 days in a row. We used to have like a couple of those every 2 years. I mean, if you don't keep track, now the other thing I did was did a repair strategy on the way up, and my brother says, leg out of the repair strategy. I said, we roll the puts, that's good enough. Well, it wasn't. Now there's a spread, we sold at 250, and we'll be lucky to get 50 cents for today. But we made the money back on the puts. But yeah, it just this is crazy, Kevin. I mean, one move, one headline, one whatever, and the more you listen to the people that are supposed to be straightening us out on TV, everybody's got an opinion as to why we're in the trouble.
Most of them stink.
Well, most of them stink. Yeah. Well, mine happens to be the more people listen to the people that we have in positions to where they're supposed to be the solution. The more they listen to them, the more they just go, wait a minute, I don't care who they are, whether they're right, whether they're left. I listened to, Rand Paul? Listened to him yesterday, and I listened to Elizabeth Warren. I'm going, how are these two people even where they are? One of them's on one end of the spectrum, one's on the other, and neither one of them has a solution to anything, Kevin. I mean, Elizabeth was telling me, in a way, and Elizabeth Warren, she's not a dumb lady, she's not anything. I sure wish I'd ever on the show. My question would be, You have a dichotomy. You have a problem in that every single time you rag on regulation not doing their job, and yet your solution is always more regulation. There's a conflict there. Doesn't she know it? I mean, every time she talks, that's what. It's not like she's a bad person. It's not like she's not trying to help. I've never accused anybody of that, Kevin. But well, with the amount of money those people are making out there, maybe I would. But I mean, doesn't she understand it, that that's an inherent conflict in her reasoning?
In her case, I don't think so. In her case, I think she really believes that it's the wrong regulation, or it's not enough regulation. And, you know, in certain ways she's right, and certainly in many cases the diagnosis is right, even though the solution is wrong. But I think she believes that. I think that's just her mindset, is we just make more rules. And you know, there's a lot of people like that you encounter in life, where you know they're very strict about following rules and they're very strict about making rules, and most of them sit on condo boards somewhere in the world. But it's a mindset that is pervasive in government right now, and that's not good. It needs a counterbalance.
Well, I think we've been, and I would love to have Maddie to participate in this, because he's more in tune with today's world. Well, maybe that's more than you, but certainly than me. Some of the things that have happened to us, and I'll use this Facebook as an example, are just a function of things getting too big and too easy, in my opinion. I'll explain that in a second. When somebody said, okay, we're not going to have any censorship. You have a right to, print books. You have a right to print pamphlets. You have a right to send letters. You have a right to put something up in the town square. It's very obvious that.
But the only thing you don't have a right to do lately is go to a school board and protest.
Well, but I guess what I'm saying is now, I think everybody agreed with that. Yet every time you say something, there's always three or four things under it, like a little bit. It's like if you are going to be somebody who's going to write a book to get you national exposure, worldwide exposure. A book implies a certain amount of effort. It implies a certain amount of resources, but a serious amount of effort. Some level of intellect. Even writing a letter is
And I think where you're going with it is some level of diligence.
Yeah, and if you write a letter, there's something that's there that you could have you put your name on it. You're going to have to sign it. Even walking down to the town square, if it's raining, is an effort. Popping something up on the wall, it's forced stuff to put stuff up, and there's something in there. If you could do something really dumb, but why would somebody really spend all that time spent writing a whole book that was totally useless, and everybody just says this is all wrong? Yet now all of a sudden you fast forward to basically any moron can get on Facebook and spew God knows what. Right, left, center, doesn't matter. You can say that it's sun's out right now and it's dark. You can do whatever you want. And somehow or another, you can catch fire. Now, the question is, what exactly is it the problem that the venue's too big, that it gives people too much access on something that maybe is inaccurate and other people believe it, or that you used to have to write a book and the other people used to have to read a book instead of making 20 letters that's saying something bad about Matt Weber, Matt Weber wears girls' underwear or something, you throw it out in a tweet. It's a hell of a lot easier than actually having a book, or actually going down to the town square and knock it on the wall and Matt Weber standing right next to you and might dot your eye. I mean, all of a sudden now, is it the impersonality of the stuff? I mean, what exactly has changed to where everybody gets the idea that you can't have, is somebody saying on Facebook, an asteroid's coming right here, you better head for the hills, is sort of like, yelling fire in a crowded theater. We don't seem to be able to deal with it, Kevin, and there's no rules. So everybody, I see everybody bitching about it, and I understand why they're bitching. I don't see one solution, do you?
Well, I don't. I think there's going to be a movement towards controlling the content, but then, that puts them in the same realm as newspapers, and I know people like Facebook don't want that kind of oversight or that kind of liability, frankly, for their content. I don't trust the people who would be the censors.
I don't either.
So that's a problem. And so I don't know what the good solution is. Probably the good solution is is more competition in that world, and there certainly are plenty of plenty of alternatives that have popped up, but they haven't taken any, they're not threats to the market share.
No.
Maybe at some point, it may take time for them to get some traction. It may take a couple of election cycles, because so much of this is politicized, for them to get some traction. I hope they do, because there really is, the real value to competition would be that if your site becomes the place where all the crazies hang out, and it's known for that, then there will be a pretty strong element that says, well, I don't want any part of that.
Well, and it gets to the newspapers. I mean, you can send in, let's do something extreme. You can send in to the newspaper, I think we should, blow up the Broadway Limited tonight. Well, there is no Broadway Limited anymore, so I can say that. Well, nobody's going to publish that, because the newspaper never could say, well, wait a minute, it was a letter to the editor, I got to publish it. No, you're the one who published it. It's your paper, it's your ink, it's your press. You can,
right.
You can't.
But Facebook doesn't want to be a publisher, they just want to be a forum.
Okay, well, but I'm saying there's going to be, there would probably be a newspaper that would love to print all that crap too and say, it's not me, but it is you. it's your ink, it's your paper, don't tell me it's not you. So how Facebook wants to wiggle out of that when they're the ones that are publishing, oh, by the way, they're the ones that are making money on it, they're the ones that are sending ads on it, it's theirs, Kevin. I mean, how is it not?
Well, I understand, and the alternatives, the Parlors and Rumbles and people like that that are out there, they want the same protection. I think it's ultimately going to be decided by the market, where you're going to have people who, people like me who just say, I don't want any part of Facebook, it's too nutty. And this is someone who tweets. So, if Twitter is not too nutty, how nutty is Facebook to drive me
away?
Well,
but I don't know if you can go there. I mean,
the reason that I like Twitter better is because I have much more control over what finds its way across my screen.
Okay, but when you talk about once when you don't do what you're supposed to do, whatever it's supposed to do is on the regulatory side. I mean, here's what I don't want. I don't want us wanting Zuckerberg being our censor. That I don't.
No, I don't want that, and nor do I want Congress.
No, but here's we let the thing get so big so fast because God knows what we're lining our pockets all day long. We can't spend any time on this. When young Jessica was our assistant producer before she graduated.
She's still young.
She's still young, and she was in the Miss Illinois pageant. She didn't win, but she belonged there. Very attractive lady, very nice, and at DePaul, every single one of her fraternity—she was in a couple fraternities, the business fraternity and something else, or sorority. Sorry, they don't have any houses there or anything, so it was none of that kind of stuff. But the business thing was called a sorority, even though I don't know why it was, instead of just a business club. But anyway, all their stuff, their classes. I'm not positive about this, so don't take this to the bank. And if I'm wrong, please send it. And, I think DePaul kind of embraced Facebook for scheduling and everything else. They use it as I don't know if the actual university did, but all the other people, all her classes and this, not classes, but any kind of extracurriculars. I think Facebook isn't, I don't know, I don't think you could go to college now and say, I don't have a Facebook account.
Yeah, well, I have a Facebook account. I just never open it.
Well, I mean, when's the last time you opened a Stacks and Jacksonville, man?
I agree that there are some things. When I actually use Facebook is for the homeowners association when I go in and update the fireworks information every year.
Okay,
that's it. And so it is useful for those kinds of situations. I know that we have a Facebook site for the business and supply chain and IT departments and so on. I don't do too much with that. I'm more inclined to tweet. In fact, I was just talking to some people yesterday. I got to get some articles up there. But I get that it's a useful tool and when used well, But the problem is that it's just not used well. And, you know, I would find myself getting in and saying, what are you doing? You get into these long Facebook arguments. You know my sister-in-law.
Yeah.
she's more stubborn than my brother.
They're a great match.
They're wonderful, and she's wonderful. She's one of my favorite people in the whole world, but damn, can we get into it? And so, you know, it's like, okay, I ain't doing this.
Well, you know,
I love my family too much for this.
I remember yesterday that I read something, of course I should have saved it, and I did. It was something like that stupidity does not refer to individual people, it refers to groups of people. I remember, this is an interesting story from a guy who was always behind the curve on this stuff. All of a sudden, one day, I decided way back in the day that I needed an email. This is when did emails first come out? 90-something? And so, of course, I just learned how to get on the net. So I get on there, and I search for it. It wasn't Google. It was something else. I don't know. It was Yahoo, whatever the hell I used. And I said, you know, email accounts. And up pops this thing. And they said, here's the best email account. And it was actually called something like Don't Got Mail. I don't know if you ever heard of that outfit. And I look at it, and it says, you can have an email here, and you get this much whatever bytes, which I didn't even know what those were. And it says, oh, by the way, you know, it's secure, and I didn't even know what that meant. And it said, it's $20 a year. So I gave my credit card, I got my email, and I paid $20 a year for 3-4 years, and was pretty much happy as a clam. And all of a sudden, one day, they said, well, you know, we can't even compete. Nobody wants to pay for it anymore, like we're out of business. Okay. But I never got an ad I didn't want. Everything I think was secure. I don't know if it's the same as Proton or something now, or actually that's their goal. But everybody else flocks to somebody for nothing. They couldn't pay the $20, couldn't pay the $15, and just have that be a business for somebody. No. Yahoo's gonna give it to you for free, or Google's gonna give it to you for free, or God knows who else. Was it, AOL is gonna give it to you for free. And just like, it's just like free commissions on trades. Nothing is friggin' free, you idiot, whoever you happen to be. You know, and here it is, 10 years later, 20 years later, man, these guys have been reading my emails, and they've been fine. If I say I'm looking for a new jacket or something, all of a sudden I get an ad for it. How collectively stupid are we, Kevin? Why didn't we just stay with paying somebody $20 a year for a nice straight email and just be happy?
Well, and I'm an offender in that because I use Gmail, but and the problem now is just unwinding from it. I'd like to unwind, but that's time consuming and not easy to do because there's a lot of changes that have to happen. And I will. I'll get to it.
Well, I mean, I have my Gmail, as you well know, and
but
up a ProTime.
Ultimately, the point that you're making is right, that we can complain about privacy, but we're giving it up voluntarily.
Yeah, I mean,
and that's not good. And part two, I think, you know, the real question is, can you block toxic people out of, you know, can you manage that? Because that's, you know, that's what I do.
Whoa, back up a hair. Back up a hair, my friend. Can you define toxic people?
Yeah, they drive me nuts.
Okay, me too.
They drive me nuts. But no, people, what's toxic people to me? Toxic people are those who they're so wed to ideology. Let me put it this way. Not willing to listen, just willing to attack.
Okay, but...
And there's lots of those out in the world.
All right, I'll say that this isn't true, but I'll lob this one out there. I have 3 felony convictions and an IQ of 70. Now, should I be able to get a gun? Well, sure. It should be an IQ of 60 and 4 felony convictions should be the barrier. The barrier is always slightly below me.
The discussion.
Well, I'm saying, if I'm toxic, I don't think I'm toxic. I think but I'll define somebody toxic who's even more toxic than me.
Well, that's okay. I'm not expecting toxic people to block themselves.
But I'm saying somewhere, somebody's got to make the call.
They can go off and be toxic wherever they feel like being toxic, but not in my life.
Well, I don't think that Elizabeth Warren or Jeff Zuckerberg should be defining what I get to read. Okay, now, and they think they should be able to. Okay, so I mean,
right
there.
And I think you should be able to. And I think you should be able to manage that. And I think we are, and I'm perfectly willing to trust you to do that. I'm willing to trust Maddie to do that. I'm even trust the idiots that I have blocked to do that.
Well, somehow, well, I guess we started the conversation, and I think we're on the same page, but I'm saying is somebody has a right to say whatever they want to and write a letter and put it in the town square if they want. I mean, I'm going back nine zillion years. But we don't necessarily want to give that person, you know, if the president or whoever is going to be in front of a whole bunch of people and 15 microphones up there like they used to be, you really don't want to give that person a chance to get up there. But we don't have anybody call in here without Maddie having his finger on the dump button. I mean, because if somebody says something really stupid on the show, we could get fined, you know, if we're on the air. And we had a couple of calls like that. We're on the score.
Oh, by stupid, you mean, you know, some of the words you're not allowed to say on the air. Because if we can get fined for just saying something
stupid,
you got to get rid of me.
Well, you could probably find a way. You could come out and say, come find me. We're gonna shoot a public official. Well, there's no words there, but you can't say that.
Yeah, I gotcha.
So the question is, how exactly do you filter the stuff that we all know we don't want to hear, and yet how do we define it in such a way? It is very much like the pornography thing. I don't know. I can't define it, but I know when I see it, and I think that's what we're struggling with, Kevin. I mean, I really do. The venue has gotten too big, and we can't filter out the. Plus, I'm not even sure that you want. And I'm going to say I work as hard as anybody. Maybe not you or Lou or Carl, but I work as hard as anybody to give a straight story here on the show. I'm still not sure that you want me giving a 10-minute routine on national TV without somebody coming on after me and saying, "Here's where I think he's wrong." I mean the venue. I don't know if you give anybody a national venue without somebody on the other side.
Without a counterbalance.
I
think that's just wisdom. Hey, one thing before we go to break, though, you mentioned being happy as a clam. Are clams really happy?
You know, you've asked me that three times. I don't know. I guess they're happy until somebody opens them up.
But I really want to know here.
I don't think they're happy when you drop them in the boiling water.
I don't think they have a central nervous system, so I don't think they feel anything.
They thought that about lobsters for a long time, too, and then somebody just said, yeah, they do.
Well, that could be.
So now if you go to a place, you're supposed to ask if you...
During break, I'll look up the etymology of the term.
Oh, God. S&P futures down... Hey, we're really only down 48, and S&P futures down 190. Like I said, this market is crazy. I do not think it's healthy for it to be doing this. Whether that means we one day just stop doing this or we go down or what we do, I don't know, but it is not healthy.
The term had to come from the clam always looks like it's smiling.
It could be.
Because it looks like a big mouth.
Oh, God. Where's Thomas when we need him? We'll be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Jackson, Jack.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Ollie. Just met over the board. S&P futures down 50. 50, 50. There's a number. NASDAQ futures down 198. Dow futures down 335. Again, Monday was the oddest day. We were down 65, 66 in the S&P futures for like 4 hours, which is really unusual for that kind of a move. And then at close, we ran up, 10, 12 bucks, closed down 52 on the futures. It's not the cash, the futures. Now yesterday, we settled in the exact same time of the day, up 65 in the futures. And then we ran down about 15 bucks on the close, it closed up 47. So it was almost the exact mirror image of Monday. I don't know if I've seen that before, like ever. And I go home last night, and of course we're down a little bit, and all of a sudden we're getting hammered. The Dow's down 338. Over in Europe, we've got, get a load of this. The DAX, which was quiet as hell yesterday, all of a sudden today, down 321, 2.1%. FTSE down 118, 1.7%. CAC around down 132, 2%. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei down 293, 1%. Shanghai, which is still closed. The last day they traded was 930, so unchanged. Hang Seng down 137.6%. Yesterday's a wave review. Dow up 311, sound familiar. S&P futures up 45, NASDAQ futures up 178. Bonds, however, are making another move to the upside. 10-year yield is up to 1.55. That's up 2 basis points. The bund, up 2 to minus 0.16. How these guys are staying minus with their inflation rate where it is, you know, only God can answer that question. I don't know who the hell else could. Japan, however, with a reasonable move up 2 basis points to 0.08. Haven't seen that in a long time. Oil. Down 34 cents, but still 78.59, which is real high. Close to 80, obviously. Brent down 30 cents, 82.26, but above 80 now. Natural gas down 11 cents to 6.18, but they had a big rally yesterday. I wish I knew some really good oil companies that did mostly natural gas that didn't hedge their self out. If anybody knows any of those, let me know. RBOB, maybe Dan Denius will tell us a few tomorrow. RBOB gas down 1 cent to 2.34. We've got gold down 390, 17.57. Silver down 24 cents, 22.36. Copper down 3 cents, 4.16. And we've got our crypto up 284 to 51,276. So crypto's running all the rest of the other currencies. Ethereum, XRP, Litecoin, all these other guys are down huge, but Bitcoin's up. I don't know why that is, but anyway, I don't know enough about them. What do you got for traffic, weather, sports, Matty?
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Off to a great start here on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. No issues at all on the Edens or Kennedy. Same for the Eisenhower and Stevenson, although further southwest on I-55 at Highway 30, there's a left lane that's closed for some road construction. So that's causing a bit of a slowdown as folks navigate around that. Dan Ryan, I-57, and the Bishop Ford are all quiet, as is Lakeshore Drive. So off to a good start here on a Wednesday morning. Weather today, same again as it's been the last couple of days before we warm up this weekend. Overcast skies, cool temperatures, a high of 69. Right now it's overcast and 66 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy with a high of 89 today. Right now it's clear and 67. In sports, the Bears announced that star running back David Montgomery will only miss about 4 to 5 weeks with a knee sprain. It was originally feared that there was some structural damage after he hyperextended his knee late in Sunday's win against the Lions. But after x-rays and an MRI, it looks like not as bad as they originally feared. So he'll be back in a few weeks, which is good news for the Bears. Damian Williams will start in his place. Bears also made some news. They added all-pro kick returner Jakeem Grant in a trade with the Dolphins. They sent Miami a 2023 sixth-round pick to improve their.
We don't want any draft picks. We don't want any draft picks.
Wild card baseball last night, Chief. It was the Red Sox beating the Yankees 6-2 to advance to the division series. They'll take on Tampa beginning Thursday. The NL wild card is tonight. Cardinals at the Dodgers. That's a 7:10 Chicago time first pitch for the NL wild card. Lastly, the White Sox start time was announced. Game one of their series in Houston will be Thursday, as we knew, but it will be the early game, and that will start at 3:07 p.m. Central Time. So people will be cutting out of work a little early, I think, on Thursday.
I might be one of them. I might be one of them.
Doesn't sound too bad.
Well, it closes at 3, so I'm not really early, but...
A few minutes early to get your spot at the bar.
So, Kevin, just as you...
Before you go, before you go on... Happy as a clam at high water is the original expression. That is when clams are free from the attentions of predators.
Makes sense.
Yeah, makes sense. I like it better when there's no predators after me. People shooting at me in the rain and stuff.
Yeah, generally it's a good thing. So what would you be happy as, you know, happy as a driver on the Dan Ryan at what hour a day?
There is no hour.
What do you think of that? The little dust up between Lori Lightfoot and Kim Fox.
Funny you should mention that. I was just going to on Wednesday morning. I sort of report. I have a clandestine meeting every Tuesday night at the Tripoli Tap, which of course has all kinds of stories from last night that I have to regale people with. It comes down to whether we need rules or not, Kevin. There have to be rules. But I met to my my friend who's he was a state's attorney for a long time, and he's been a defense attorney for a long time. And he says, what's going on with this Kim Fox? And he says, I don't understand the mentality. He goes, the mentality is very much like the federal. If I don't have all the evidence, I'm not going to pursue a charge. And the federal, in case people don't know this, federal wins like 95% of their cases. They only take the ones they've spent months on and get all the evidence they think they have, and they come in there where it's very difficult to win a case, sir, because they only take the ones that they think have a slam dunk, and they got witnesses.
Right, they only prosecute a sure thing.
Yeah.
Or as close to a sure thing as they can get.
And he said, the thing on the west side, he told me to watch the video, which I haven't yet. He said, the video is unbelievable. He goes, first of all, the police, there's a police car right there. The guy's watching it. He said, so... There's not going to be any witnesses, all right, from either side. Nobody's going to tell on anybody because people, they don't feel that the law enforcement can protect them, so they're not going to speak out against the gangs or whatever. It's not happening. So that's a big problem where they've essentially taken over the neighborhood and not the good guys. So, you know, regardless of what people think of that or the police or whatever, that's not a good thing. He says, the part I don't get, he says, you have people on film, you have policemen right there. You're never going to be able to prove whether the person shooting is the one that the bullet hit somebody inside the house or something. He goes, I get that part, especially if you can't find the gun. Says, but you've got a picture of a guy or two right there on the video. You're not supposed to be able to discharge a weapon in the city. You're not supposed to be able to shoot at somebody. What's the matter? How is that not a layup? I mean, why don't I arrest them for that? Just like the guys who allegedly shot our friend's wife. 100 mile an hour chase, guns in the car. Could you prove that bullet got there? I don't know. But isn't that enough? And isn't what they just did enough to put them away for a while? Even if you can't prove first degree murder? Kim Fox is convinced if you don't have the person who actually hit the person, the rest of the people are just okay. They're not. Are they? Or what am I missing here?
I don't know what you're missing. It's, but that kind of permissiveness does not bode well. I heard somebody say recently that the other issue that we have, it's not just who we prosecute, but it's this idea that the no bail or letting people out on bail. So there's really nothing more dangerous than a violent criminal who has a court date and will definitely lose in court and get sent to jail, you know, potentially for life, maybe for 20 years, whatever. What a dangerous time that is to have that person out and to make it easy for that person to be out on bail, because that's, you know, you got nothing to lose. You have nothing to lose, so, you know, anything goes as far if you're inclined to being a criminal. And there are so many, I don't have hard statistics on it. There's so much anecdotal evidence of people doing that, that when they're out on bail, that's when they have two more assaults, maybe a murder charge, you know, whatever, because they're going in anyway, or they're going to be fugitives from a sentence that's going to put them in jail for life. So, you know, what do you got to lose?
Well, that's why
it's a bad law enforcement mindset.
Well, it's in keeping with my don't let policemen retire, make them be in forensics or whatever. My buddy Monty, who got his car stolen for like five blocks a couple weeks ago, he says, aren't you going to have somebody like dust the car down? Now, what you're saying, Kevin, and I'll take it to the next extension, is the chances are the guy running around with his hoodie on at 4 in the afternoon or 3 in the afternoon in broad daylight, stealing somebody's car in a nice neighborhood out of a Jiffy Lube, this is not his first rodeo. And I'm going to say there's probably a reasonable chance, I won't put a number on it, that he's either out on bail or he has been convicted before. In other words, I believe that his prints are in the system, and not because he's a stockbroker. So whatever it is, even though stealing this car is not something you want somebody in jail for life for, or maybe you don't even want, you know, care so much to chase him, or even though I would, I will bet there's a very strong possibility that if you lifted this person's print from the car, you know right where he is, he's either on bail, he's on probation, he's on something, and you can go and get him. Because this car was just one reason why he and his homie were out looking around in the middle of the day. I'll bet there was a gun in the car. I don't think I'd lose that bet. And I'm going to say they're just out wandering around. They're not heading to work. Okay.
Yeah, you sort of sound like me talking to my kids when they were teenagers. I used to tell them, if you get caught doing something, I am assuming you weren't unlucky enough to get caught the first time.
Right.
So punishment will be according to that. And you know what? If you happen to really get caught the first time, that's your bad luck.
That's just your bad luck. Yeah. But this is...
But aside from that, Tom, you know, it isn't the idea. I wouldn't even bring nice neighborhoods into the conversation. I think a lot of the crime is bleeding into the nice neighborhoods, but that's not who I am worried about protecting. I'm worried about protecting the people who have to live this every day.
That makes two of us, Kevin. Nobody gives a crap except you and me. I mean,
yeah,
that's a strong statement. I know.
Once doing a section on culture in a class, I just started going through a bunch of pictures, and I said, "Describe the culture," and then I got the errand, the very cluttered urban neighborhood, one of my students just blurted out without hesitation, "Oh, that's mine. That's where I live."
Yeah. Yeah,
that's not how we want people to live in our society, and that's where we really need to be focused and cracking down. Not to pick out people who, you know, people, races, groups that we want to harass, but a focus on the quality of life for large groups of people who really need our help, who really need the help of law enforcement, of society in general, to not be tolerant of it. And you're right, nobody gives a crap.
Well,
that's a big problem. And when you and I give a crap, and when more people like you and I give a crap about the quality of life for people that live in neighborhoods not as nice as ours, then maybe we'll get something done.
Well, Kevin, if you look at, not many people know the South Side better than me, at least some parts of it. I mean, there's parts I don't know much about, so I'm not genius on the whole place. I mean, I'm like a tourist in Hyde Park, I'll admit that. But if you look at the addresses and you look at where the shootings and stuff are, when you use the term Inglewood, I'm going to say the old Inglewood. When I was going to my grandmother's when I was age five and. Or three, because they were watching me a lot, because my dad was dead and mom was working. They were in Inglewood. They were at 62nd and Wallace. And Inglewood was defined by 63rd and Halsted. That was the second biggest shopping center in the city. And they had a Sears, they had a Weebles, they had a Morrisby Saks, they had countless stores there, clothing stores. It was the second, was the last real stop on the L on the south side, and people got off. There was dime stores that sold, you know, food for the night. Anyway, it was a massive, there were five movie theaters within 100 yards of the corner, or 200 yards of the corner. It was a serious mecca of people. That's my Inglewood. Then when you went west of there, you went to Marquette Park, and all these places now became West Inglewood and everything. Well, if you notice, every year, the shootings go from east, where Inglewood High School was, which was east of there. They're going west, so now your most dangerous areas are like 63rd and Ashland, Western, Kedzie, because there's still people there. But Audrey and I went to a 25-year wedding anniversary at this black church at 62nd and Marshfield, which is three blocks from where my grandmother used to live. Well, to her second house when she moved further west. And you drove around there and you see all the loser gangbangers driving around. And every block, you probably saw five, six houses on each side where there's regular people trying to make a home there, where there's flowers and the thing. They might have a fence around the place. But basically, that's where they live. And just what you're talking about, Kevin. But now, if you go east of there, you're going to find that there's way less of those people on any block. And there's just blocks that are just all down, or one or two houses waiting for the wrecking ball. So the 80,000 people that you have leaving Chicago, the 80,000 black people, the last decade, that, and I think there's way more now over the last year or two, but those are the people that there used to be 10 houses, 5 houses on a block at, say, 63rd and Wentworth. They're now all down. So right where my grandmother's house, and I drove by on the train a couple weeks ago, they had my car in the shop, hers was the only house left on the block. Those were all houses. There were two flats, three flats. They're all down. So there's nobody that lives there anymore. Those people are now, and now if you go further between Ashland and Western, you're seeing the exodus from there. And one of these days, that'll look like bombed out Berlin in the next year or two. Because when you say, where are these people leaving from, they're just what you're talking about. They're the five or six people on the block that say, I can't do this. I can't go to the store. I can't send my kid to the bus. They can't go to school. You're exactly, you don't know how, I guess what I'm saying, Kevin, you don't know how right you are. How's that for a statement?
Well, I want to believe I do, but okay.
No, to the point where it's way worse than you described.
You have more observation of late than I do.
It's way worse than you describe. So I don't know if that's a source of comfort to you.
But I also know what it's like on the west side of South Bend, and I know what it has been like in the past in Elkhart and isn't anymore. And I know you know, what Benton Harbor is like, and how much effort has gone into cleaning that up and improving that area. It's, you know, it's doable on smaller scales. It's doable at a neighborhood level. Pick one and go to work. You know, you don't have to fix, you don't have to address the enormity of the problem. Just address a piece of the problem, one piece at a time.
Well, there's one,
and I would love to see somebody running for mayor that thinks that way.
But there's a barrier you have to climb. As you know, I'm a huge, people don't think I am, a huge free market economist. That the only way this stuff happens is if it's worthwhile for individual people to find their capital, commit their capital to where they have some chance of stability. Doesn't have to be people willing to take risks. Some chance of stability and making a return on your dough. The idea that you're going to take an area that's burned out and put a few government housing in there, you know, and make sure you grease all the right minority people for the housing so it's way more of a price than it ought to be. The idea that you're going to revitalize a neighborhood that way is so ignorant, I can't even go there, Kevin. It is,
yeah,
so ignorant.
Magic Johnson has made a fortune investing in neighborhoods.
Yeah, well, what I'm saying is you need the...
It's a good story, and it's a model.
Yeah, but someday, somewhere, somebody is going to have to say, you know, there's no shootings down here anymore. There's people going back to work downtown. Wow, there's an L stop, like, right here. That you're 15 minutes to downtown. I think if I put some houses on this block, I might actually sell a few of them. I'm going to do it. And then you don't want the city charging you $90 million for permits and making your life miserable when you're building the place, which they do because they think they need the money.
Right. That's so, the role of government, is to get in there and support the effort.
But you look at the area I live in now, which is by DePaul. When I moved in there, when Rabin moved in there, the place was a bleep hole. I mean, the neighborhood was run down. Every single house, because the housing stack, well, the housing stack on the south side that's left, is way better than the north side. It's all brick. It's all, you know, plaster walls, those kinds of things. North side housing stack is lousy. But every house needed serious remodeling. And I'm going to say every single one, for square mile after square mile, was all done. You didn't have to tell anybody to do it. You didn't have to come up with government money. You didn't have to have a minority guy making sure he puts in the window for twice the price of somebody else. People do it on their own. You have to create the environment to where people do this on their own. Because people can go get way more capital, way more effort, way more stuff than the government can ever do for them. Right?
It's always the truth, because if it's, government is limited by how much it can tax, and there is some finite amount that it can actually tax, and the not-for-profits are limited by donations, but anybody who is an investor, who is, operating a business, will scale when it's profitable.
I would say...
It's not just one project that you'll do. It is you'll continue to do the projects because they're all profitable, and this is why the solution has to come through business to so many of the social problems that we have. Because when the solutions are done in a for-profit model, they and I'm not talking about the Pfizer for-profit model where. Everything they've earned in the last year is because of COVID and the government support, and the government just, ramming down everybody's
throat.
They're
the only people, Kevin, that can.
More.
They're the only people who have their nose up their ass at government to the point where anybody else who had an invention regarding the COVID or a breakthrough, he had to go through Pfizer to get through the FDA, and that really sucks. Hey, I will lob one out at you, though. There is a chance the government can actually do something on a small scale. It's not like Chicago, where every preacher, every community organizer, every minority here, every well-connected white person, whatever it is, has to have their finger in this bungalow before you put it up on the south side. It is possible for government to do the job right. And I'll give you one example. Have you ever gone to visit Hoover Dam?
Yes.
When you go through Boulder City? The government built all those houses. And they did it amazingly quickly. And I'm sure they might have hired some private people, but you're out in the middle of nowhere, so you don't have a chance to have all these people with their finger in a pie. The joke was, you had to remember your address, because if you just remembered the house, there might be a house up next door to you, and you wouldn't think it was your house, because it was an empty lot the night before. They built houses that are still up, people still living in them, still looking nice, in 1935, and the government did it. And they did it so fast, way better than maybe even private industry could do it. They did it, and they got out of there. But you didn't have the time where there's 50 million people involved in the thing. Hey, I got a
question. Well, it's the same approach that was used during World War II. When you took space, then you had to have an air base up there in days. So that's how it worked.
By the way, speaking of rules, now should there be rules at the Tripoli? Last night, my buddy Bill and I...
Yeah, no Boston fans allowed.
Well, first of all, they are so special. I love listening to them for like an inning or two, then I can't stand it. So we walk in, and Bill's sitting at one of these high-top tables, and I go, what are you doing here? We usually sit at the bar. Well, we can't sit at the bar. I said, there's two chairs right there. I walk over. Sure enough, there's two idiots' names on the bar. They got their bar spot reserved. Now, in a bar... Really?
What an outrage.
I'm outraged, right? So Bill's been going there since 1978, for God's sake. So we sit at the table, and now the place is now getting mobbed, right? All these Boston fans. So there's two guys that had a spot right next to us. So this is how trading works. Now two of his buddies walk in, and a guy goes, would you two guys be willing to trade two seats at the bar for your four-top table where you only have two people sitting there? And we said, we certainly would. We're bar guys. So then we hop to the bar, and of course, the two spots now are still reserved. Now it came down to the game's starting, they're not here. Do you get the reason? At what point do they lose this spot? And I'm going to say, if you're not there at first pitch, your name comes off the bar. That would be my rule. But now I'm not. I'm
if
not,
it's a big game like that where the bar is packed, I agree with you.
Now we can't. Now do we have to have rules in the bar? But I love the Boston fans, Kevin. There are these two guys behind me, and they are so Boston. And one of them is actually black, but you don't see too many black Boston fans. But if you're from Boston, doesn't matter what color you are, you're a Boston fan. So every time there was a slight outside pitch, and the guy in the batter like got the call, it was I can't wait for the robot umpires fire all these bleeps. And of course, one would go their way. Well, that's baseball. You know, you shouldn't always call them out there. it is absolutely. So, it sounds like our idiots at our tweet sense during a Notre Dame game. Every call goes against
us. Yeah, the one my great experience was when I went to the Fiesta Bowl and saw Ohio State and Clemson a couple of years ago now, and you know sat in an area very populated by Ohio State fans. Same thing. It was a treat to, for Clemson to win that game.
But the Boston fans they not only want if there's a bad call, it's not like, you know, well, okay, there's going to be a few of those a game. You immediately want to fire every umpire and replace them with robots. I mean, these guys are not. It is scary. I mean, you could be the best defenseman if you're watching hockey ever, and you let a goal go through. Why didn't we get rid of that guy? I mean, they flip like there's no even Bear fans don't do that. Oh no, McCaskey's the world's best owner, and then over the penalty. God, the guy's an idiot. I mean, they are fickle, and they're loud. They are very loud. Would you say that, Manny?
Very, yes, but they care, and yeah. I always like fan bases that care about sports. It's better than like an LA fan base.
But now, why all of a sudden is this game? It used to be any given night when the Bo Sox were on, because Nick gets the feed from the New England feed, that there would be 10 guys in there just watching the game. And there would be people from out of town. Matter of fact, one night I was talking to some lady. She's a Boston fan. She had a Boston bar. All she did was travel. She was in the drug business. And not street drugs. She goes, I have a Boston bar every town I go. So I go watch the Bo Sox. But you don't see any of that anymore. Maybe all of a sudden last night, everybody's there. What?
Well, I think that...
Check out the Packers website sometime. But when Bob Golden and I years ago went to see Notre Dame, Tennessee, and we flew in and out of Nashville, and then drove over to Knoxville because it was kind of a late planned trip, and so when the Bears and the Packers were playing that Sunday, and we had a flight back later on Sunday afternoon, so we were looking for a place where we could watch the Bears and Packers while we waited to go over to the airport. And there's nothing on the Bears site. You know, there's nothing. You go to the Packers site, and there's this long list of all these Packers bars all over the country. So good. We picked out the one because we knew the Bears and Packers would. And we figured, well, there's going to be a room in back for the Packers fans. We walk in this whole place. This whole place is green and gold. The entire tavern, everything about it is built around the Packers. They're having, you know, raffles and drawings for Packer paraphernalia, and there's everybody there, and then there's these two Bears fans that are sitting in there. And that was the game after Peyton passed away, and the Bears, if you remember, won. I think there was a tipped kick or something, that the Packers could have won, and they didn't at the end. And I remember saying, yeah, and then going, looking at the bomb, go, let's go. Let's get out of here. This is about to become a very surly place.
Well, man, you think it's people just have, most people have MLB now and they can watch all the games or what?
No, I think that there was a big malaise after the Red Sox started winning. I think once they won in 04 and then they won again in 07 and then they won again, I think, in like 2013 or something like that. I think they got so used to winning that they lost some of their edge as a fan base for baseball. And then now there's been a few years where they haven't won it. And I think that it's coming back. And I think I experienced that a little bit with the Cubs fans too. It was, I mean, in 03 and 04 and then in 07 and 08, I mean, it was bitter. It was like, we were starting to become Red Sox fans. And then they finally won it. You know, 15 had a great run. 16, they finally won it. 17 NLCS, and then by 18-19, the edge was gone, and I think you get a bit of a malaise as a fan base, and then now you're watching Schwarber and Rizzo hit home runs last night in the playoffs. You're going to see Bryant probably go on a deep playoff run, and I think the Cubs fans are going to get their edge back and trying to get back in there, and I think that's where the Red Sox are now.
Well, the Cubs had a very likable team where people I mean, they were.
You liked them because they won.
Well,
They stopped liking them when they stopped winning.
Well, but I mean, I'm saying that William Sano and Banks were beloved in this town forever. I mean, I think to this day, Rizzo, Schwarber, and Bryant are going to be somewhat on that level because people like those guys. I mean, right?
Yeah. Well, I don't think of Schwarber as much of that. I think Bias will always be popular because he's a good guy, a fun guy. Rizzo, yeah, it's hard not to like Rizzo, especially when you think of everything he's done in the community and for kids with cancer. Bryant, not the big personality, but certainly a terrific player. But the personalities that I think got most beloved were Rizzo and Bias. And
well, but Bias is a massive,
so. They were fun guys.
He's a massive star in the Hispanic community. He could be the number one star in the whole league in the Hispanic community. I really love the guy.
Yeah, I think Juan Soto might argue with
that. Well, I mean, there's a few others. But all right, Kevin, talking to you on Friday. Hey, we bounced back. We're only down 43. SP and the NASDAQ's only down 164. Come back, Mr. Russell Rhodes.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Something happening here.
Well, no, Station Jackson. I'm talking about Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures up, down 44. The NASDAQ Futures down 166. We're going to talk about this crazy market with Mr. Russell because he knows more about what's going on with the VIX and these huge trades we're seeing. And I've had some questions from my clients the last couple of days about maybe piling on with what these other people think are going on with the VIX. But, Russell, how are you, buddy?
I'm good. I wanted to talk about what you guys were talking about before, but I'll talk about whatever you want.
No, what was that? Because you can always add in.
Well,
right?
first off, on the VIX thing, are you referring to, I sent you an email and told you what I think people are thinking about late October, early November, because that was the timing for that big VIX trade that you've been talking about for a while.
Yeah, I mentioned that you sent that, by the way, a couple times.
Okay. And I think I was, I was out of the country for longer than I wanted to be because of COVID. Not that I got it. I just couldn't get a test and get out of London quickly enough. So I got stuck.
Really?
But, I think somebody's expecting some sort of shoe to drop in late October, and there are two things. That Evergrande thing, it really could come to a head in October. If it doesn't come to a head in late October, they got to refinance all their bonds like in March. So those are the two time frames. If I was trying to predict the volatility in that, which is really hard to do, that's what I would be shooting for there. But then also, I got a lot of concerns about earnings at the end of this month. People talking about third quarter earnings, but then not as much what just happened, but I think the lack of clarity that we'll probably get out of companies, because you don't want to be a CEO trying to predict what's going to happen in 2022.
No.
Right now, I'm actually at the Kelly School. We do an annual forecast for the market, and I'm working with another professor on the forecast for the U.S. equity market, well, just U.S. markets and global markets as well.
So you want to be one of the guys up there getting the free rubber chicken?
You need to, actually, I think we're doing like 13 presentations in a three-week period around the state of Indiana. It's something that the Kelly School does every year. And I was, you know, I've been there 6 weeks. I was kind of honored, shocked, and surprised that they asked me to participate in it when I'm brand new. But they asked me to, maybe it's one of those things that nobody else wants to do, and that's how I got stuck with it.
Well, I'm going to say that you should jump all over that, because I don't know if you remember.
And I got to tell Kevin, we are doing one thing in South Bend. I think looking at the schedule, it looks like we start in the north and work our way to the south in Indiana.
I'm going to try
to make sure he has an invite to the rubber chicken breakfast in early November.
You maybe are too Chicago young, not young, but Chicago young. When I first got out of school, there were, God, I can't remember the names of these guys. I'm going brain dead. I'm trying to find it here on the internet. there were three guys. There was the University of Chicago Forecast Luncheon.
Yeah, it was they still do something like that, don't they?
But it was a huge deal. It was at the Palmer House or someplace, and even to get a seat was a big deal. I mean, I don't know. I forget who I got invited by. Maybe it was a chairman of Palmer. But it was a guy I had for marketing. Was one of the guys, and then it was, I don't know, was it Fackler? Somebody, but it was three guys that were really, really well known, and they did it every year, and the thing was packed, and it was on the news that night. I mean, it was a massive deal. You couldn't have gotten one of those guys out of that group with a crowbar. I mean, it was probably, I mean, maybe there was one in, you know, somewhere out east where the Harvard guys did it, but it was a national event.
I think Chicago, at least before COVID, I think they were going to China and doing that thing as well. But it was, you know, I know they would do a New York version.
Well, they probably did, yeah. Well, I'm going to put in here, University of Chicago Forecast Luncheon, I'll put in like 1978 and see who the hell the people were. Because I bet it pops up here. I don't know. It won't. No, they keep going to Chicago Booth. This is before there was a Chicago Booth. The stuff I'm hearing, Russell, I mean, I saw your thingy with the regarding the Evergrande. And I have clients and listeners that have sent me. One is a graph chart, whatever you want to call it, showing 1987 and this year, and how they are eerily similar. You know, of course,
remember seeing that.
That doesn't necessarily mean much. I have one listener who sent me something saying somebody had gone all the way back to 1900 or something on some kind of chart, and they decided that the 18th, which is the Monday after the regular expiration, right? Because the first was an expiration, so the 7th is going to, or the 8th, and what's going to be the 15th is an expiration, right? So.
Yeah.
It's that Monday is the Monday after, and the crash was the Monday after the October expiration in 1987. That was going to be worse than 87. All right, but now complicating that, and this is where I want to get you involved, that Tuesday, the 19th, is an expiration of the VIX futures, I believe.
They're AM settled. So,
okay.
This is where I want a giant disclaimer, because the contract parameters have changed periodically, and I haven't been with SIBO for 3 years, so they may have changed it. But I do believe that the futures do trade overnight up until sometime the morning of settlement. But the options cease trading on a Tuesday.
Right,
so effectively, for settlement purposes, the expiration is an AM settlement. But at least for option trading purposes, I would say, I technically you can't say expiration's the night before, but they stopped trading the night before, so.
Well, if you look here on the date on my, on my machine for the options, again, is October 19th, which is that Tuesday. Now, you're right.
They show that so that people know that they can't trade after that date, because some of the data provider, and I really want to dance around this one, But a data provider was saying that the Wednesday was the expiration date, and somebody thought they could still trade on Wednesday, and they couldn't.
Right.
And
okay, I understand.
There was some litigation involved there.
Plus, I think the options expired the night before and the futures in the morning or something like that.
They stopped trading the night before, but technically they expire on the open the next day.
Right, so but they
AM settled.
But you settle into the future, correct?
You settle into the same VIX calculation that okay. the future settles into.
Okay, so without going into the detail that we don't have in front of us, I get this thing from actually it was a couple of my clients, but one is you know, I talk all the time, good guy, and we were talking about how can we kind of mimic this November October thing that all these other people seem to have taken this chance with, where you're long the November calls and you're short the October calls. Now the problem there is you're talking about something that it's totally different than we all normally talk about. If you're long the November calls in IBM and you're short the Octobers, if the stock runs up, they're both going to run up because there's only one underlying, which is IBM. But your VIX is almost it's almost like a corn option. There's an October underlying and there's a November underlying, correct?
Yes. And, you should treat different expirations in VIX as having different underlyings.
Right.
Because, and technically all options have different underlyings. It's the forward value of the stock and the forward value of IBM a month from now and the forward value of IBM 3 months from now. That's actually a slightly different number.
Well, but it has to do with interest rates and dividends. It doesn't have to do with IBM being different. No,
not at all. But it's just, you know, but the forward value of VIX is, it's based on implied volatility and anticipation of where you might get a volatility effect.
Well,
so you don't have the concrete forward value. You have a market forward value that best found by looking at the futures contract.
Well, to give you a concrete example of something that's maybe more simple, especially if you're in the Midwest, you know there's something called corn, right? Well, I think the corn is that there's a November expiration. Which got November, which got December? Corn or so. Anyway, one of them has a... So let's say it's a November and a July. I could be wrong there, but I think...
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you go long the November and you go short the July, you sit there and go, what could happen here? Well, what if you have bumper crop in the ground and all of a sudden you get a flood or you get something that really impacts or you get a massive purchase where they need the stuff tomorrow from, like, China. I don't know if China's still buying stuff, but say they did. Well, you can't sell them the November because guess what? It's in the ground. You got to sell them the near term, which is the July, and you might not have enough. So you could race your price up on the near term because somebody's buying it, there's a huge demand, and yet everybody's convinced that once the stuff in the fields, which is a bumper crop, comes in, all these prices are going to drop. Well, your July price could be $12 a bushel, and your November could be $8. But you're short the July, not the November. So what I'm trying to put together here, Russell, is if any of these people happen to be right, I mean, you with the idea that it's the end of the month problem with Evergrande, or if there's a crash on that Monday, or that maybe the Friday before, or something like that, with the expiration of the VIX on Tuesday, all I'm going to say without going into all the different stuff, which would take you and I an hour to explain, it could be a major bleep storm for anybody who's short the October and long the November. So I told my client, I told my client, the last thing we want to do is buy like the 30 time spread or something in here. Because if we're long the VIX at 30 in November and short at 30 in October, the thing could be 50 in October and still be 30 in November. The last thing we want to do, we're paying a buck for that spread today, is to buy it, is to have to buy it back for 20 instead of sell it, right? Which could happen.
Yeah. And I never would have, in fact, I never would have done the trade that we're talking about ever. And a lot of brokerage firms won't even let you do it. But when I first went around, you know, when you brought this one up and I started talking to some people, a couple of people looked at it and said, it must be a mistake.
Must be what?
That somebody meant to do something in October and then backed out of it and did it in November or something like that, which is not how, but it was so just wrong with how you should be approaching VIX.
Well, I mean, it's a high...
If I were a risk manager and had a full understanding of VIX, which most risk managers don't, I'd flag that sucker in a heartbeat for what we just went through.
Well, you and I been doing this a long time, and your predictions, by the way, have been pretty good lately. But still, you're going to say, I don't like the market here, or I like the market here. You'll stand by that. But I don't think any of us are arrogant enough to say, I hate the market here, and by the way, next Thursday it's going down. I mean, you know, I mean,
right.
I mean, anybody have that kind of a, there has to be something discrete that they know about.
It, you know, it just, it could be, again, the two things that I can see on the horizon is, like I said, that Evergrande, they had a 30-day grace period on the coupon payments. Just thinking that, you know, they're going to be able to stretch it out for a couple of weeks and then it's really going to hit the market. Or big time concerns around earnings. And there's a volatility index that follows the NASDAQ 100. And when we have bad earnings seasons, that volatility index tends to move to a premium before the earnings announcement, but in the month before the earnings announcement. And it did it like last week. Even on a day where the S&P 500 was not up as much, as the NASDAQ 100. So I'm keeping a really, really close eye on that. That's a really tough one to try to explain on radio.
Oh, yeah.
But there are forward-looking indications that October, November is not going to be so high. And the only reason I can see somebody taking a short volatility stance in October is to try and help pay for the November one. But instead of doing that, I would just wait until we get closer to the October expiration to put on a bullish trade using the November option.
Yeah, but that's what I told
me. That's what I would do. I wouldn't. I don't think, you know, shaving 50 cents off of the bullish November position, if I'm right, is worth the stress that would be involved in it and worth what could possibly go wrong. You know, and maybe
Russell,
cost by just doing a spread in November when we get a couple of weeks into the month.
Russell, I'm not going to go into political incorrectness and styles of trading and maybe some nationalities, but there is a style of trading that was rampant on the trading floor where people were that arrogant, where they would say, I think...
Oh, yeah.
But I think McDonald's trading 243, is down 179. There's going to be people saying, I'm really bullish on McDonald's, and I think I'm going to buy the 44 calls, but it's not going to go past, you know, 60. So I'm going to sell three of the 60s and do the spread for even. So not only were you arrogant enough to know that our McDonald's is going up, but you also know how much. So
you can.
And I would say to these clients, guys, it's never a good idea to be naked options on the way you think it's going, because you're convinced you know just how far it's going. So
yeah.
that's just like a really, it's like, I know McDonald's is going to be taken over at 260 and not like 280, so I'll sell the 260s. I go, no, that's not, how do you know that? How do you know that the guy's not going to think it's worth 300 if he actually right that it's being taken over? I mean,
or somebody else is going to come in and fight for it.
Yeah. So I mean,
counter trend trading, which is what we're talking about here, by selling options without any protection whatsoever, is just not right.
Well, I mean, there is a time, maybe to do that. And the level would be that way. I mean, it's hard to have people with like $1 million accounts, and when that, what was the stupid stock that was up so much? The ACM, you know?
Oh, AMC.
Where the thing's trading $60 and the 100 calls are like $5 or something. It was the most bizarre thing I ever saw. And, now, granted, could it be to go to 110 or whatever? But if you've got a $1 million account, can you sell two of those? I wouldn't be selling 50 of them. But there's a number when things get so totally out of whack that if you have the money to do it and you take a real small number, I mean, could that guy have sold a one lot and picked up, I'm going to say, an easy $500, which is also, you should never say, but, I mean, could you do that? But I guess we're dancing around. There's some stuff out there that seems to be dangerous. When you talk about earnings, by the way, if you've been hanging around worried about COVID, you haven't been. But guess what word is being uttered? I uttered it a few weeks ago, maybe a couple of months ago, and said I should never utter this. It's like yelling Shank at the driving range. I've heard the word stagflation out of a few people's lips.
Oh, I've seen it too.
Wow.
And I mean, for, you know, I know everybody in the world's not following my every move, but I just got back from London, and gallon of gas about $7.50 right now. Which, you know, it's always high there, but it's even ridiculously high. And gas stations are out of gas. I actually, on my way to the airport yesterday, went by two gas stations that had police tape or police-like tape all around it where you couldn't get in there. So, and a couple of times I had to order Uber Eats, and more than once, there weren't enough delivery guys available to get my food.
Wow.
Because it's just too expensive for them to, you know, fill up their, and everybody that I did get food from was using a bike.
Wow.
And the point is, the price of it, you know, price of gas is going up because there's a shortage of it, but that it is so utilized in so many things that involve keeping the economy going.
Oh, yeah.
You're seeing a slowing there. That's stagflation right there. I just witnessed it.
Well, the, now my question to you is this the earnings period where we introduce nominal versus real?
It may be.
I don't think we're ready for that, do you?
I don't think a lot of people would know what it means. I taught it last night, actually. We started on the equity valuation section of the MBA course I'm teaching, and I talked about why you would use real versus nominal interest rate. And, you know, I think my career started in the mid-90s, and I just don't ever remember us really paying attention to real interest rates that much, just because we never really worried about inflation.
Well, we always did, because I forget which one. I don't think it was Friedman. I forget this guy's name, and I shouldn't, but I actually probably learned more from him than anybody, because it was a two-quarter class. It was like the history of economic thought, and it went through industrial revolutions in Britain and in Japan and here, and agrarian reform and everything, and how the numbers came about and how things that didn't used to get counted become counted. So you got a really good idea of how exactly the numbers you talk about. How can China grow 8% a year? Well, because you're counting stuff as people move from the rural to the city that you didn't used to count before. It's not like anything's really growing that fast. But one of the things was that you would take those numbers, and like, for instance, this happened during the 70s a lot, in early 80s, where if Home Depot didn't just come out and say same store sales were up 5%, and everybody cheers and, you know, runs off and has, mm-hmm, you know, four shots at the local bar, they would say, okay, sales are up 5%, average prices are up 10%, therefore real sales are down 5%. I mean, it's totally wrong, in my opinion, from the way I grew up and all these numbers. You can't raise the price of, and I'm not saying it wasn't raised to you. I'm not saying it wasn't justified. You can't, mm-hmm, sell somebody a piece of plywood for $60 that was last quarter $30 and not mention it, that you're counting just sales and not amount and not pieces of plywood sold. I mean, back in the late 70s, General Motors would come out and they'll say, and they probably still do, you can probably dig the numbers out, they will say sales are $5 billion and 25,000 units. And the next time they would say sales are $6 billion, but oh, by the way, it's on 24,000 units because we raised the price of every car 20%. I mean, we're not getting any feel of that at all from these people right now. And somewhere, I think we're going to get it, and I think it's going to come pretty soon here.
Yeah, it's very difficult to disagree with the possibility of prices going up and the economy slowing down all at the same time.
But I mean, it all would take.
And you'll continue to hear the argument. I mean, the argument over in the UK is they've got they basically have a transitional problem associated with people driving trucks. And they're relaxing the visa rules they think they're short 30,000 truck drivers, so they're trying to get people from the EU to come back over and work. And then they're also, I love this one, they're also relaxing the standards on what crimes you may have committed and if you're allowed to drive a truck.
Well, I don't really have a problem with that, depending on the crowd.
I don't have a problem with that, but I was fine that. That one was announced while I was over there as well.
How much of their gasoline problem is every idiot went and filled his tank up?
I think that has something to do with it. There's such a panic that if you see gas available, you go get it. And when that happens, and also when you're, you know, 3/4 of a tank and all you've seen is the price of gas go up from day to day to day to day, you probably fill up opportunistically as well when you wouldn't in the past. And I know that is crushing when combined with some supply shortages, that increased demand or that increased demand that pulls it out of the ground and puts it in your tank and it's not really getting used, that is just a recipe for complete disaster.
I'm going to try and do some math here in the in my head, which I can. I have 200. Let's say, let's make it even. It's way low because there's some that are sitting in people's driveways. Let's say there's 200 million cars in the U.S. I'm looking here; it's actually more like 265 or something. But I'm saying some of them probably don't move. But say there's 200 million cars in the U.S. and the average tank. Now, mine's 42, but let's say the average tank is 20 gallons. So the average person, from what I remember from the 70s and stuff, at any given day, if there's no panic, there's no nothing, that the gas tanks are roughly half full. All right, so you're talking 2 billion gallons of gas that are sitting in people's cars, and which is the biggest reservoir of gasoline in the country is in people's gas tanks. So if all of a sudden somebody gets a hair up their behind and says, oh my God, there's a shortage, and everybody runs out and fills up. Let's say half the people run out and fill up. That's 100 million people times 10 gallons. It's 10 billion gallons of gas that nobody needs. I'm going to say that would take our system, it would drain every refinery, every pipeline, every holdings, every storage facility, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
It wouldn't even be close. And if that starts to happen, you can create your own shortage. It's like everybody running out and buying 50 rolls of TP. We don't have 50 rolls on the shelf for everybody in the world, because guess what? Well, I was going to say, how many rolls does somebody use a week? One? Two, maybe? I don't know. I've never stopped to look. But you can create your own mess, right, basically. SP futures down, only down 35. NASDAQ futures down 150. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at cognoshr.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Loading up by Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. Mr. Weber on the board. SP Futures now down 36. It was down 50 plus when we came in, so we're rallying some. NASDAQ Futures down 148. They were minus 200 plus when we came in, so I guess we're moving here. Dow down 272. It was over 300, so something. Individual stocks in the Dow. We got the big movers are Goldman Sachs down 280. Every single one is down. Microsoft down 310, 285. Apple down $1.60, $139.51. So every single stock in the Dow that's trading pre-market is down. Every single stock in the transportation average that's trading pre-market is down. Bigger mover there is Federal Express down 250, United Parcel down 350. I don't know why they're down so much. Anyway, but they are. Where everything's down here, just like it was up yesterday. For Europe, we've got the DAX. These are big numbers here for these guys. DAX down 256, 1.7%. FTSE down 104, 1.5%. Kekaran down 95, 1.5. In Asia, we've got the Nikkei down 293. That's a full 1%. They've been very volatile. Shanghai still closed. Be interesting to see when those guys open. Hang Seng down 137.6%. As a way of review, yesterday, Dow was up 311. S&P up 45. NASDAQ up 178. So I'm going to say we are pretty much right. We're not quite down as much as we were up yesterday. Bonds up. They were up a minute ago, but now they're 1.53. They were 1.55. That's a drop since we last did this. The Bund minus 0.18 and Japan positive 0.08, which is as high as there we've seen in quite a while. Oil down 75 cents, but still 78.18. Brent down 67 cents, 81.89. Natural gas down 26 cents, 6.04, but still over $6. It's not only volatile, it's high. Maybe Russell will tell us which oil companies we should buy that are mostly natural gas. Well, oil's going up too, so maybe we just like all of them. I don't know. Gold down 290, 1758. Silver down 20 cents, 2240. Copper unchanged, 419. And last but not least, we got Bitcoin up $1,000, but every other one of these things is down, which is kind of crazy. But the Bitcoin is 52,345. Maddie, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We have a couple of crashes out to the west and southwest. We'll start on the Eisenhower. There's an accident on inbound I-290. Right at east, on the eastbound side, as I said, at 25th Avenue, that's exit 18. That crash has now been moved to the shoulder, but all kinds of congestion if you're heading inbound on I-290, just completely jammed up. So I would avoid that if you can. We also have a crash down to the southwest on I-55. This is on the southbound side before Lockport Road. This crash is blocking the right lane and causing some stop-and-go traffic to the southwest on I-55. Normal traffic volumes on the inbound Stevenson. Southside expressways have been normal all morning. No accidents to report. Traffic building steadily on the Edens and Kennedy on the north side, but no accidents to report there either, though we do have a crash. Bussey Road, which is Route 83 on the northbound side at Bryn Mawr, that's affecting the western suburbs. Everything else all quiet out there. Weather today, another cloudy, dreary day for the third straight today, and similar highs as well. Overcast with a high of 69. Right now it's cloudy and 67 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 89 today. Right now it's clear and 68. In sports, the Bears were busy yesterday. They got good news on their running back. He will only miss 4 to 5 weeks, David Montgomery, with a knee sprain. There was original fears that it might be more damaged than that, but his knee hyperextension turned out to just sprain, and he'll be back here in 4 to 5 weeks. Damian Williams will fill in as the Bears starter. Bears also added All-Pro returner and receiver Jakeem Grant from the Dolphins in a trade for a 2023 sixth-round pick. Major League Baseball, the Red Sox are moving on. They beat the Yankees in the one-game wildcard last night, 6-2 at Fenway. They'll take on the Rays in the American League Division Series. National League wildcard game is tonight. Cardinals at Dodgers, 7:10 Central Time first pitch. The White Sox will begin their playoff run on Thursday afternoon. They're the early game. That's a 3:07 Central Time first pitch. White Sox at Astros in Houston. Chief.
Hey, what do you say we take 5 minutes to talk about something a lot more fun than the market going in the crapper here.
Okay.
I got a thing here about any players. This is a question into this Quora Digest, which I get. Everybody has their own opinions on this stuff. But are there any players deserving to be in the Baseball Hall of Fame but will never get in? Here, I'll give you this guy's list, and then you guys see if you can add it and add to it. I have one, and plus I have a question for you dudes. He's got the permanent ineligibles, Pete Rose and Shoeless Joe. I'm not so sure they're permanent, but anyway, that's just telling
well,
you.
Well, Shoeless Joe's, it's been 100 years. I mean,
well,
sounds pretty permanent.
I think they're going to put him in when he's dead.
Shoeless Joe is dead.
I think they'll do it for the fans, but they won't. You know, I think that's what's going to happen with that one.
Shoeless Joe is dead.
I think he's meeting Pete Rose.
Say
Pete Rose, yeah.
Shoeless Joe's grandkids are dead, for God's sake.
What?
Yeah, grandkids are dead, Shoeless Joe's.
Yeah, Shoeless Joe is and Pete Rose, obviously both gambling scandals. Shoeless Joe has, you know, been dead for, I don't know, 80 years or something.
Yeah, something
I mean,
like
so I don't know if he's ever going to get in. Pete Rose, I do agree with Russell. I think he'll get in at some point.
All right, now the next list is the steroid era. Roger Clemens, Barry Bonds, Mark McGuire, Sammy Sosa, Rafael Palmeiro, Alex Rodriguez, Manny Ramirez. Two questions. Are you think we're going to add Pudge Rodriguez to that list?
I think you could. There's probably other guys, too. Pettit, I think, was a borderline Hall of Famer, and he was implicated as well, and there's been many others.
Because Pudge, with like a .299 lifetime batting average and 10 gold gloves, how do you not get in as a catcher? I mean, otherwise.
Well, yeah, and Barry Bonds is way better than that.
Yeah.
And before he was on steroids, he was a Hall of Fame player.
I don't disagree, and I would. I think you probably almost could say the same thing for Clemens, and maybe A-Rod.
Yeah, I agree. I think at some point, those guys will all get in too.
Now it says here the weird snubs. I don't know who some of these guys are, but I know a few of them. The weird snubs: Jim McCormick. I don't know who that is. Bill Dolan. I don't know who that is. Lou Whitaker. I do. Bobby Gritch. And Buck O'Neill. Those are two that are interesting.
I remember Sweet Lou Whitaker, watching him play back in the 80s and early 90s. I think he played that long with the Tigers, right?
Yeah.
I remember him. I never really considered him a Hall of Famer, though. He was always kind of borderline. But I guess I'd have to look at his stats.
Well, because then it says, this is interesting. This is one of the reasons why I wanted to do this while you were here, Maddie, is there are also several players who are qualified by WAR but don't quite count as weird snubs. Such as Rick Rushel, Kenny Lofton, Craig Nettles, Kevin Brown, Dwight Evans, Tony Mullane, or who he is, Buddy Bell, and this one I can't believe either, Louis Tien. I'm going to say that reason why Rick Rushel's not in the Hall of Fame is because he was fat. He doesn't look the part.
Babe Ruth wasn't that skinny.
No, but he couldn't. He was for a while. But I mean, Rick Rushel was, he actually used the guy as a pinch runner, even though he looked like he was a big fat. So, and he was, I think he still owns the record for batting at Western Illinois.
I mean,
he was a pinch hitter and a pinch runner, even though he was heavy, because he was very fast. And
well, the guys you mentioned that I watched play, like the Kenny Loftons and stuff like that, were all very good players, but none of them I would consider a Hall of Famer.
Well, but I was saying, as you look at now, you start if you're using the WAR, which I could never go through the math. They're saying some people popped out here. Rick Rushel was the 60th best WAR of all time as a starting pitcher.
Wow.
And now, how many pitchers are in way below him in there? Now, if you believe this thing, there's questions. I mean, Kenny Lofton went from team to team, which is a suicide for anybody.
It is,
Hall of Fame,
yeah.
Right? Greg Nettles, I always thought was real good. Dwight Evans, his career didn't last as long as it should, but for a long time, he was one of the best outfielders around. And Louis Tien, I still don't know why he's not in. But
I put Lofton in a heartbeat. He was at the Braves, right? I get these things mixed up a little bit, but I feel like he had a cup of coffee with the Braves. Because I remember him playing for them when I lived down there. I remember him playing for Cleveland against Atlanta in the World Series. And God knows I remember him playing here. And he could get to things in the outfield that other people just couldn't get to.
He was a great leadoff hitter.
And those things don't show up in the numbers. You know what I mean?
Yeah, when he was on the Indians and they went 1-2-3, it was Lofton, Vizquel, and Manny Ramirez, 1-2-3. That was one of the best offenses I've ever seen.
Oh, God, yeah.
And they never actually won the World Series. They made it to two and lost to the Braves, and then they lost to the Marlins, I believe. But Lofton was scary. And then he went to Atlanta, like you said, and then he bounced around a little bit.
Did he go to the Cubs for a year?
He was on the Cubs 03 team as that they acquired at the trade deadline, and he was red hot in August and September after he was with the Cubs and carried them to the playoffs. And they were, as everyone knows, you know, five outs away from making it to the World Series. And he was a big part of that, catalyst at the top of the order and center fielder. And he's one of the last great leadoff hitters. There haven't been very many since.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to say, shift into football for a second. I'm going to say that, I won't say never, but the name just escaped me. Wilbur Marshall, by anybody's stretch, was probably one of the top 10 linebackers of his era. But because he played on two teams and two totally different schemes, I bet he never gets in.
You are penalized for that for some reason. There's no doubt. By the way, Kenny Lofton was a great basketball player. I believe he started at point guard for Arizona, and he started on their baseball team and their basketball team, and they were, you know, top 10 program in both sports. And he was just a great athlete.
Well, I was remember last week for whatever reason I got a hair up my behind and I dug up Kenny Hubbs, who got killed in the car crash. Well, air crash. He was the pilot, so it wasn't like he was in there with somebody else. He was on a 62 Rookie of the Year for the Cubs. But he was recruited to Notre Dame for football. He was the best quarterback of the state of Utah. And he was recruited by UCLA for basketball. And I mean, the Cubs came up with $50,000 and he went to the Cubs. I mean, a lot of these people are tremendous athletes. The Cubs had a game down in Cincinnati. And they were talking about Don Zimmer. Popeye, the guy who looked like a cartoon figure.
Oh, yeah.
Well, evidently, Don Zimmer grew up in Cincinnati. And they said he was the son of a guy who had a food warehouse. He worked in the food warehouse, so the guy was strong as an axe. He had forearms like Pop. Evidently, he had records playing Cincinnati high school football that lasted for, like, decades. And he started on the basketball team, in addition to playing baseball. And you look at these guys, even though they might not look right to us on TV, it doesn't mean they're not at the top of the gene pyramid. I mean,
there's something about John. I don't think anybody's ever said Don Zimmer was at the height of the gene pyramid before.
No, but I mean,
but I'm sure he could do, and I'm certain he could do things that none of the three of us even combined could do.
Well, Lou Boudreau, he looked like a regular when he got older. Maddie, would you ever even think the guy did anything?
No, you wouldn't.
Yeah, he took his hat off and they rubbed his head for good luck.
Yeah, and he Lou Boudreau. But he was a three. Was he a three? I don't think he was a three sport all state at Thorn Ridge, but he was at least two. He was baseball, football, and basketball, and then he went and played all three sports in Illinois, didn't he? You would never guess by looking at the guy when he was 50.
Oh God, no.
Anyway,
I would have thought he was. Relatively slow. Played catcher and relatively slow.
Those guys,
looking at him, but again, age ain't doing me any favors.
Those guys aged a lot worse back then, too. Though I think
a lot of them smoked. None of them. I don't remember when I was a kid.
Like now, you see people that are 70, and you're like, man, when I was a kid, 70 was like you were about to die.
Oh, absolutely.
And now they look like they're like 45.
They're running marathons.
Yeah.
I don't know a guy. Well, it was a different world, man. The guys went to work. You worked physically during the day. So you wouldn't want to arm wrestle any of those guys, right?
No, definitely not. They all fought in a war,
yeah,
some kind, and so they were sort of old beyond their age already.
Yeah.
Even when they were like 22.
Yeah, I mean, my grandfather could do at age 75. He could do 12 chin-ups, which I don't think too many people can do.
God.
12 chin-ups.
I think I've done three.
Yeah, but
not together. I mean, in my lifetime.
But I mean, those guys worked all day.
Three sets of one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But those dudes never
had upper body strength at all.
But they, I don't know. I don't know a dad who had a pair of running shoes. I don't know a dad who ever got on a bike. The only thing they ever did was like play catch with the kids. I mean, when they got home from work, they didn't do anything but just sit, smoke, and by the time they were 50, they looked like they were 70. Even though they were when they were younger, I'm sure they were great athletes. I mean, it just was way different. You know, I mean, let's put it this way: Nike couldn't have existed in 1958 because who would have bought stuff?
No.
All right,
hey, I want to take a real quick left here because there's something I want to. If you haven't brought it up, but I wanted to bring up.
Yeah, enough sports.
Have you talked about Ken Griffin's speech at the Economic Club?
Is this the one where he's leaving Chicago?
Yeah. Well, he didn't say that. He just, I mean, he just kind of highlighted something all the rest of us know and something that you guys spent a lot of time on in the first hour. But, I mean, I think you guys know that I got my clock cleaned for no particular reason other than my race walking down Chicago Avenue back in March at 7:30 in the morning. And that's why I moved over. That's why I left Loyola and moved to Indiana. I just don't want to work in a place where that happens a block from me. And there's nothing I can do about it other than pick myself up and go to work. But the kind of behaviors that really used to be, you know, centered in certain parts of the city, they had bled over into neighborhoods where you just, you didn't have people drive by and shoot people like they did at Dearborn and Division.
No.
Over there, which was in front of the building that my wife and I lived in when we got married. And it was right where my dog, right near my dog's pet stop at 1210 North Dearborn.
Jesus.
It's even better. I mean, Russell, it's even worse than what you're saying in terms of.
Oh, I know it is.
No, what I'm talking about is the Cabrini Green was less than a mile from Astor Street, or mile and a half. Nobody ever. You walked out of the Jewel, you had half the people were in fur coats and half the people were using food stamps. They walked out the door and they walked in different directions and
they
never.
They went their separate ways.
They went their separate ways.
And I actually, you'll love this one. I've been in Cabrini Green. I was tutoring for I was just doing volunteer tutoring for the elementary school. And I had a handful of the kids over as a reward to watch one of the WWE pay-per-views at my loft on Wells. And then I took them all home, walked into their houses and left. And I wasn't the most comfortable feeling in the world, but, you know, they weren't going to do anything to me because if somebody did, all hell would rain down.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Without a doubt.
Volunteer shot, blah, blah, all that kind of stuff. Plus, I think there was a sense that I wasn't there for, you know, that I was there and doing some good for their community as well. That attitude does not exist anymore.
Oh, no, no.
It doesn't.
We're
more divided than we were 25 years ago when I moved here. And I really just believe that you can pretty much do anything you want in Chicago. You can get away, and this Lou was talking about how his kids get caught doing something, odds are it wasn't the first time they get it. Well, yeah. I've got a better lesson for my children. You can get away with anything you want. You just can't. I mean, if you do it right and nobody's suspicious of you, you can pretty much get away with anything you want. And I think there are a lot of people that are getting away with things and they're escalating bad behaviors because there's never been any repercussions. You guys are talking about people out on bail. You know, when less than 10% of shootings in Chicago result in an arrest, I'm not talking about conviction,
right.
I'm talking about arrest, and less than 5% of carjacking, same thing. Those are, you know, if I go to a casino and I have those kind of odds in my favor, I'm going to be trying to make early retirement at the casino.
Well, the concept, I mean, and this is, I don't know the lady, but I'm going to say from what her activity is, the Kim Foxes of the world. It's they're going to prosecute somebody if they got him stone cold dead, to a wrong term, stone cold for murder. But there's this idea that if somebody's shooting and you can't pin the bullet on them, you can't shoot down a street in the city of Chicago. Come on, you can't do that. That's enough of a crime to get your ass off the street. But somehow they think this is either. I've had three people mention this to me now, and I probably shouldn't even say it on the air, but I'm going to. They say, this really stinks. When you have people on film that are discharging weapons in the city and you decline to arrest them or charge them, something's wrong. Either you're getting paid or nobody ever in that job has ever done that before. I mean,
it truly is. I don't know if it's just making sure you keep getting reelected.
Well, but I mean, But is it the romance of the hood? Is it? You know, I remember. You know, I don't know what it is, but something's wrong. I mean, You're told by Tony Preckwinkle to not put people in jail because the budget's so bad. I mean, something is entering this story other than just the story. There's got to be something coming out of left field. I mean, right?
There's no repercussions for bad behavior. And, you know, I know the guy's been completely vilified by the national press because of his association with Trump. But before, oh my God, Giuliani was, you know, before he got involved in all that, he was, you know, he was a mayor of New York. He turned New York around. He really did. One of the first things he did was, if you broke any sort of law, they were getting it. If you jump the turnstile, you're going to get a ticket.
Except, Giuliani, careful where you go I agree it was under his watch, but I think the story, please, Russell, you know more about this than me. I think the story was the police chief, who I forget his name, came in with that system, and it was his plan, and what happened was the police chief got so famous that Giuliani canned him because the police chief was getting all the raves instead of Giuliani, and now when people said what the system was and who did it, Giuliani's name's on top of it and not the police chief.
Let's because we only got like 5 minutes. Yeah. Throw the credit out. The real point was basically if you're policing everything, the bad behavior. If you're policing people that are yanking divvy bikes out of the thing and then using the divvy bikes for bad, using that to steal, ride up their circle a guy and take his really nice bike, which we've seen on video. All you got to do is go to Twitter, and you can see this happening to people. If you just arrest them for initially vandalizing the divvy bike, you're kind of nipping the crime in the bud right there.
Well, the alleged story was on my friend's wife who got killed on the Ryan 8 weeks ago, or whenever it was, that the people were let go. Now, again, this is the rumor that they were let go because they pleaded self-defense, because the other car shot at them first. They were returning fire. And if the lady got hit in the middle, that was basically, tough, whatever. And wait a minute. There's no penalty for discharging a loaded weapon on an expressway. Really? I mean,
we probably never thought that was something they were going to need a law.
I absolutely guarantee you, because I was with an attorney last night, that there is a unlawful discharge of a weapon ordinance in Chicago.
Of course there is.
Yes. And now it's okay?
I wonder how many shot, and for people that aren't in Chicago, you've got every city seems to have cameras watching an awful lot of people. In the United States, they put blue lights on them, so your rights are not being infringed, and you're on camera. In London, where I was for the last 10 days, they're just everywhere. And if they wanted to, the city police wanted to track me from my hotel to Heathrow yesterday, they could have quite easily done it. In fact, their police was could tap into my Uber driver's car camera.
Well, I don't know if I'm a big fan of that, but
the camera in the front, looking, not me in the back, a camera looking out the front.
About Russell, are you going to, as a London tourist, are you going to say that the London police and the London government actually puts the cameras up because they're concerned about stopping crime? Are you going to make that statement?
I think it helps tremendously.
Okay, now do you think
everybody knows they're being watched? And also keep in mind the majority of police in London do not carry guns.
All right, now my next question, and the more serious one, do you think for a second that the cameras that are all over Chicago, all the expressway cameras, have anything to do with stopping crime and not just getting a contract for somebody and getting a check in your back pocket?
I don't think the cameras are being utilized for any damn good whatsoever.
That's exactly right. But they're there and somebody's making money. The only ones we care about are the ones where you're 6 miles an hour over the thing and sending people 35-hour tickets by the second. Those are the ones we care about. The other ones, nobody cares about any of this stuff. I mean, like I said, the guy last night tells me the videos are all over the shooting, and we didn't arrest anybody.
No. I think multiple videos. I tend to, at the end of each weekend, to see how things are going, I'll look at the Chicago Scanner guy and the Hey Jackass website that we've talked about before.
Yep.
And it's just so disappointing.
Hey, what's and, your? We only got 30 seconds. What's your, Maddie? You're not going to be here the next couple of days. What's your guys read on the White Sox? They're underdogs.
Yeah,
I've got tickets for Monday, and I wouldn't be surprised if I don't go to a game.
Wow.
Houston
is good. I think it'll be a great series. I think Russell will go to a game, but I do think the Astros will win the series, but I think it's going to go the distance.
Sox have some good players. You just think they're too young, maybe, or what?
I don't know. They have some very good players. They seem to be healthy for the most part. I don't love their pitching, but they have a lot of pitching talent. It just has to come together. So if they can pitch, they can certainly hit.
They can't have the two relievers oofing up like they did the last month.
That's right.
Thank you, Russell. Take care of yourself, buddy. Matty, thank you. SP Futures down on 30, call it 40. NASDAQ down 144. Not good. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.